We're here again with Patrick Ailey, a longtime political and human rights activist here in Haiti, someone who's struggled alongside the Haitian people for quite some time, and also someone, as I understand, who's quite passionate about Haitian history, and that's what we're hoping to talk about today. In Montreal and in Canada, we celebrate February as Black History Month, in terms of a month to reflect on histories that have been left out of the historical textbooks of the world, so to speak. And I think that one of those histories has been Haiti's history. I think it's a history that is all too often ignored in terms of its importance and significance. So maybe you can talk a bit about Haiti's history of independence and what that signifies to you as a Haitian person, specifically within the context of today.
Yes, you're right to point out that Haiti's independence was a momentous event, and an event which has significance not only for Black people, but I think for the whole of humanity. When the slaves revolted en masse in 1791, and after a long struggle against the French army, were able to proclaim Haiti's independence and the end of slavery, it was the first time that a whole people extended the notion of freedom to everybody, you see? And not only that, they also demonstrated that slavery is the unnatural state and freedom is the natural state of man. Beside, it was not only an anti-slavery struggle, it was also a struggle for self-determination against colonialism and imperialism, you know? So I always say that the Haitians went beyond what, for example, the Marxist envisioned, that the proletariat would, by freeing itself, free everybody. It was not the proletariat this time, it was even lower. It was the slaves which were considered as chattel. The chattel actually stood up and demonstrated their humanity, and thus, I think, freed everybody. So in that sense, the whole world has a debt toward Haiti and the Haitian Revolution. And very few people realize what it took for people who were slave, kept ignorant, and 60% of whom at the time of the uprising had been born in Africa and knew of this country here only as a kind of concentration camp. It was a foreign and hostile land to them, you know? And I always say that it is something that is almost beyond comprehension, you know, that such an incredible feat that could have been achieved. And you know, for those who are so often very harsh about Haiti and the Haitian people, saying that how come 200 years after independence Haiti is still poor, I say that without even going to the hostility that the dominant power of the time, if you want, exerted against the new republic, one has
to...
When
you say the dominant power, you mean...
I mean France, the United States, you know, England, all those who had colonies, all those who had slaves, were absolutely horrified by the Haitian Revolution, and they wanted to contain it as much as possible, you see? Don't forget that in Haiti, the slaves liberated themselves in 1794, whereas in the United States, it was not until 1865. In the French colonies, it was not until 1848. In Cuba, it was even later. In Brazil, it was later. So the Haitians were at least 50 years in advance to the so-called enlightened countries of Europe, you see? But also, one has to realize that the Haitian started from zero, you see? It's not the same as the other colonies like Canada or the United States, where the Europeans who came to dominate these countries simply cut the ties with the mother, the metropolis, you see? But they came in with the same culture, with all the advances, you know, in terms of political structure and whatnot. The Haitians had to invent or try to reinvent from zero, you see. So truly, for Haitians, this is the third century, not the 21st, because we had to start from scratch. And I think that although nobody could be satisfied with the state of Haiti today, you know, but one should never forget that it's only been 200 years. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And one impression that I have gotten, even from just being in Haiti for 3 weeks, is the amount of public discourse and public respect that's paid to some of the characters, some of the leaders behind this slave revolt. The other day we were at Fort Jacques, mm-hmm. in Kenscoff, a fort that Dessalines used during the revolt. Maybe you can talk a bit about some of these characters, Toussaint Louverture, Dessalines, mm-hmm. and their significance in Haiti then and even today.
Yes. Toussaint is often referred to as the, you know, the forefather, they say that, you know, the precursor of Haiti's independence. Toussaint was this black general who took these bands of uprisen slaves and turned them into an army, gave them the organization, and also when he succeeded in actually controlling the whole island, enacted a constitution which abolished slavery. And also, he attempted something that was way ahead of its time. He tried to have blacks, whites, and mulattoes, or people of mixed blood, living all together in a rainbow nation. All of that, of course, was destroyed by the stubbornness, or you know, the short-sightedness of Napoleon, who by trying to reestablish slavery, you know, truly made it into a racial war in a way, you know. But it was not racial. It was about freedom. And as you know, Toussaint was captured by the French and then deported into one of the coldest part of France, where he, you know, he was murdered, one might say, because he was left to die, truly. But what happened is that after a period of, I'd say, disarray, after the landing of Napoleon expedition and the capture of Toussaint, pretty soon some of the generals that had rallied to the French after Toussaint's exile, they came to realize that they had to come together, and this time not, if you want, have simply a liberation from slavery and autonomy, but true independence, if they wanted to keep their freedom. And that's how Dessalines, who was a black general, got together with Pétion, who was a mulatto general. And although they had been enemies a few years back in the fight for power, they decided to ally themselves so that the war of independence could be won. And that's how the French were finally defeated on November 18, 1803. And all the French soldiers and also a lot of French planters left Haiti. So we always tend to go back to these heroes, especially Toussaint, but also Dessalines and Pétion, because they symbolize the Haitian flag and the Haitian motto, which is, in union there is strength. L'union fait la force. And I think that today, at this particular juncture in Haiti, we should look more than ever to that example. Because as you realize, since you've been in the country, this is a country that's deeply divided. It is divided mostly between an elite who has monopolized knowledge and money, the economy, and the vast majority of poor people who toils for less than $2 a day. And such a divide is incompatible with a viable nation. So I believe that more than ever, it's time to look to the example of Dessalines and Pétion and try to reach a compromise between these elites and the masses. Otherwise, you know, this country is doomed.
One thing I've also noticed is, of course, throughout Haiti's history, there's been that racial stratification, racial hierarchy. Mm-hmm. The mulattoes who had their freedom before the blacks. And one thing that I've noticed is that the elite that we talk about in Haiti today, you know, for example, the group of 184, this is led by people who aren't, I guess what we would describe as black. We still have that mulatto elite. How is that racial hierarchy has been kept throughout all these years?
Well, you know, as is often the case, when you have a society that is unjust, unbalanced completely, it tends to reproduce itself, you see? And it really takes a decision by a collectivity to stop that. However, one should be very careful in describing the split in Haitian society in color or racial terms, you see. For one thing, the divide is mostly between people who consider themselves Haitians and people who consider that you only are civilized the less Haitian you are, you see. They do not consider themselves as Haitian, and that has nothing to do with color. It has to do with a cultural bias. It has to do with, you know, the, in French they say the présupposé, the basic hypothesis that these people have made that, you know, we need to bring the Haitians to civilization, and in order to do that, we have to make them into, you know, second-hand copies of Europe. You see what I mean? Or America. Secondly, the reason why it is more complex is that the mulattoes no longer truly control this country's economy. You'd find, if you really do a research on that, that they've been mostly replaced by Haitian of Middle Eastern origin, you see, and who tend to function like clans, you know. They intermarry and voila. And of course, this is not conducive to a viable country. I think we have to find a way to integrate this community of Middle Eastern origin into Haiti, you know. There is resistance on their part, but there is also, there has not been what I'd call a true effort to integrate them. See, we need to do that. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have a country that's divided, and that's a recipe for catastrophe. And, you know, the Haitian people have been depicted, pictured to the world, and every day you read about how violent Haiti's history is. And look at how little violence there is when you consider the social divide, the distribution of wealth in this country. You know, you go to Jamaica, despite the incredible rise of violence in the last 2 years, we still have a murder rate that is half what it is in Jamaica. And now, when you speak about Haitian history as being one of the most violent in the world, this is a complete hogwash. First of all, I pointed to you that it's on a country that's only 200 years old. And, you know, every country has rough beginning. You know, you take the history of France during the time of the kings preceding, you know, 1789, you know, it's nothing but revolts here, poison there, and things like that. But not only this, what do you consider violence that's part of your history? Is it only the violence that occur on your soil, or does also the violence you bring to other countries part of your history? And in that sense, I'd say that England, the US, France have a more violent history than Haiti. You know, I always take this example, and I'm going to sit down, you know, and actually write it. If we start the clock in 1804 and follow the history of France, the history of the United States, the history of England and of Germany, as alongside that of Haiti, I think Haiti is going to finish dead last in terms of violence, you see? And that's this way of describing Haiti is extremely prejudicial to the country and to the people. Because, you know, a lot of friends we could have in countries like Canada, the US, etc., are completely led astray by this description of Haitian history. You know, the violence in Haiti should be 10 times what it is, given the difficulties, the economic difficulties, and as I say again, the terrible social divide. You have like 5% of the population controlling upward of 70% of the wealth, you know. And when I say 5%, if you then took that 5% and segmented it, you know, you'd find that the top 1% probably controls more than 50% of the country's wealth. You know, in any other place in the world, you'd have these data and you'd have yourself, you know, a huge confrontation of Rwanda's like proportion. But you don't have that here, you see.
Another interesting story I find is that, I mean, from what I've read of Haitian history, it also seems like a history that, in a way, kind of defines itself as being somewhat of a struggle against white supremacy. And one story I particularly find interesting is the story of the creation of the Haitian flag itself.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about that?
Yes. It's been said that, you know, before May 18, 1803, when really it was decided to go and fight for independence, the Haitian were fighting against the French flag, which, as you well know, has red, white, and blue. It is said that at that Congress of Unity that happens in 1803, Dessalines ripped the white part from the flag, the French flag, and united the blue and red, you know, saying that the red symbolized the mulattoes, the blue the blacks, and the white were the French. And then since Toussaint's project of a rainbow country had been rejected by the whites, they were taking the whites out of this. But yet, it was not an anti-white, but rather an anti-French, and I would say an anti-Napoleon gesture. And I'll explain myself. Some whites, and especially a Polish regiment, actually sided with the Haitian in the war against Napoleon's army. And they were made Haitian by Dessalines. And Dessalines' constitution said that no matter what your color, the color of your skin, you were considered a black person in Haiti. You see? So really, it was mostly symbolic rather than racial, really, you know? And the Haitian Revolution was one that was very, very generous. For example, it stated that any slave or anybody of Indian descent who set foot in Haiti would automatically become free. So, And, you know, this generosity, again, manifested itself.
And when you say Indian, you mean people like who were, would be indigenous
to because, you know, yes. Because, as you know, the first inhabitants of the island were the Arawaks, Indian, who were completely disappeared by the Spanish. But the Haitian knew about them, and as a matter of fact, the name of the country was the ancient Indian name that on the day of independence, the Dessalines gave the country back its Indian name, Haiti. So yes, and this generosity was again manifest when Bolivar and Miranda, who, as you know, are Latin American revolutionary who fought for the independence of the countries of South America, came here for help. And they were given money, weapons, and even Haitian volunteers went for them to free Latin America from the Spanish yoke. And they did that more than once on the condition that Bolivar, for example, would abolish slavery once he had declared independence. So, you know, it's a very, very interesting story, the history of Haiti.
Mm-hmm. You'd mentioned before something very interesting, that the world actually kind of owes Haiti a debt for the example it's made. But I guess in one of the cruel ironies of history, Haiti was, of course, forced to pay a debt to the French for property that was lost in the slave revolt. Now, when Aristide was in power, of course, it was well known, and we're talking, you know, centuries later. He made that very clear connection with that point in history, and he demanded slave era reparations from the French. Can you talk a bit about how these reparations affected Haiti from the initial onset, but then also that modern side to it, Aristide's demand for reparations?
I think Aristide's demand for reparation was completely just, even if it had very little chance of actually succeed in concrete terms, you know. But it was just, and it was also a dangerous demand from the French point of view, because, as you know, Haiti is not the only country that the French have devastated, you know, looted. So they'd be facing the same kind of demand from all their ex-colonies in Africa, you know, in Asia and whatnot. But in Haiti, for Haiti, this was doubly just. We were not asking for reparation against slavery itself, which France has declared a crime against humanity, so we could have asked reparation for that. No, we simply asked reparation for the money that was forcefully extracted from Haiti to repay those slave owners that Dessalines had kicked out, you know. And this played a tremendous role in stunting Haiti's growth, you know, because that debt took more than 100 years to pay, you know. So imagine another country starting with having to pay something that represented more than a number of times the gross national product of the time. And it was paid, as always, by the Haitian peasant, you know, for years, took more than 100 years to pay that money.
Yeah.
So it was a just demand.
But how was that money forced from them, and why did they pay it?
I think it was done, you know, with the as you call it, the gunship diplomacy, you see. But I think also that one of the reasons why that debt was paid is because the Haitian leadership at the time and for long years was at odds with its own population. So rather than face the French and having to face their own population at the same time, I think they made a deal with France so that France would not represent a threat against them, and they could concentrate on trying and, if you know, control their own population, who was agitating for a better distribution of wealth in the country. And at the time, wealth meant simply land, you see? Because I don't think France at the time could have truly retaken the island, you know. So I think it was a threat of violence, but also it was either weakness or wickedness from the Haitian elite.
An interesting thing in Canada, one of the reasons why Canada supported the coup d'etat in 2004 is because we have a foreign policy objective right now called responsibility to protect. And I think that this notion is a very important one to deconstruct or to debunk, because what it says is that the Canadian government says that we have a responsibility to protect and to care for failed states. Mm-hmm. But I think what you're trying to get at is the fact that if we were to call Haiti a failed state, we would have to look at its history, and certainly it's these external factors. You know, it's a history marked by you know, this kind of gunship diplomacy, mm-hmm. and then numerous invasions.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of these factors in terms of, I mean, what has led Haiti to be a failed state?
It's a bit hasty to call it a failed state. Or if it's a failed state, it's a state that has been failed by a number of very powerful countries, amongst which I think that France and the United States are the two worst examples. It is a country that never was allowed to leave its own dynamic, you know, or evolve by itself and from forces within itself. And the most recent example is this coup d'etat in the name of protection that was done against President Aristide. I'm not defending the policy of President Aristide, because this is a moot point. What I'm saying is that the man was twice elected by his people freely, and he had a mandate. So how can you engineer his overthrow and actually participate in it in the name of the duty or the right to protect? And anyways, you know, you judge a tree by the fruits it bears, you know. They've protected us, all right, you know. What they've done is unleash violence in this country, unleash political repression. That's what they've done, you know. President Bush is probably one of the worst presidents that the U.S. have had. But nobody have suggested that one should go, the Canadian Army should go secure Andrew Air Force Base, mm-hmm. and then have him taken forcefully from the White House and sent to Siberia. You see what I mean? The whole world, if you took polls in other countries after the first Bush presidency, you could see that the whole world was saying, you know, this guy is very bad. And yet the whole world accepted that the American people reelected him. And that was that. You see what I mean? So why can't it be the same for us? Why some countries, and I think it's deeply, deeply racist, that some countries can decide, you know, that one, if we don't pick right, they have the duty to correct our choice. This is very, very dangerous, and it is deeply racist. Just today, I hear that the reason why I say it's racist, especially because when it comes to France, is that from the left to the right, the French political class is united on Haiti, you know? And just today, I heard that some ex-French socialist prime minister came out and said that the Haitian people should vote for this candidate. I mean, would they ever do that in the US or in an Italian or Japanese election? No, but they feel in their paternalistic, racist way that they can tell the Haitian people who's the best president for them. Haitians are incapable of doing that, it seems, you know?
Yeah. And this is where we, you know, I think where we can start to draw the links between Haiti's past and Haiti's present is January 1st, 2004, Haiti celebrates 200 years of independence, mm-hmm. massive celebrations
yes.
throughout the country, and not even 2 months later, a coup d'etat led by the US, France, and Canada against the democratically elected president of Haiti. In this context, I mean, I think that the fact that it happened so close to the bicentennial anniversary of Haiti is significant. Can you reflect on that?
Yes, I think it's no coincidence that it appeared, it happened exactly in the year of our bicentennial. You see, the dominant powers, you know, they can hold a grudge for very, very long. Haiti is still a hated symbol for people who want to dominate the world or dominate other people because of their race or their color or anything like that, you see? So it was important that Haiti be humiliated on the very year of its bicentennial. But also, these two terrible years that we've lived have shown something else which is worth taking note of. You have a people who is incredibly resilient, who knows very well what they want, just like their ancestors back in 1791. And despite the repression, economic and police repression, you see these people standing up again and demanding their right. I think that you have in Haitian a people who, despite the fact that 50% of them cannot read or write, have a level of political consciousness that I've rarely seen in any other country. And that is an asset. Given the chance, this can be turned into a real force for change. But the Haitian people can't do it alone because they have strong enemies. I mean, this has been demonstrated. We need to be able to inform the international public opinion, and especially the public opinion in this country, who have interfered so grossly in our life and in our affairs. And that's, I think, the all the importance of the work that you do and other people from Canada or the US are trying to do, is to actually tell the truth about Haiti and about the Haitian people and about the current political situation.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Patrick Ailey here in Port-au-Prince about Haiti's history. Thank you very much, Patrick.
And thank you.